I guess the first and obvious question that we have is in light of the conflicting evidence that lay people like us have about Delmart Vreeland. Why are you so convinced that he's telling the truth?
Well, a closer examination of what appears to be the evidence leads to a whole different set of facts that really give credibility to his story. Not the least of which is the fact that the U.S. Navy has submitted documents indicating that he has in excess of a 1,200-page service record, which is impossible for someone who was supposedly in the service for only 4 months and discharged for unsatisfactory performance. The court record shows that a call was placed from open court to the Pentagon in January of 2002, wherein a Pentagon operator confirmed his assignment and the rank of lieutenant at the Pentagon. There's a number of things which, if you look deeply, especially about the history of his attempts to warn both Canadian and U.S. government officials about September the 11th, that really gives solid meat to his assertions that he knew details of the attacks and was trying to tell people about them. As someone who has investigated covert operations for 25 years, and who has dealt with a number of cases that are legendary and similar to Vreeland's, Edwin Wilson, Al Martin, Chip Tatum, Bill Tyree, and many others, there is a very strong and very consistent pattern in his life experience and his record with records of people who we know were intelligence operatives. There's a lot of press stories showing that he has a detailed criminal background, but on closer examination, one finds very few convictions to back up any of those stories. One also learns on closer examination that he was frequently incarcerated with major drug lords or major terrorist or organized crime figures in a role of being an undercover operative. He would have needed credentials to establish that he was someone that the bad guys could trust. And these are people, both the terrorists and the organized crime families with which he has dealt, who have the ability to run criminal record checks and press records and so on and so forth. And so this kind of a pattern would be, record would be necessary to give him bona fides. I was very surprised, but it was a corroborative piece of information to find a Los Angeles Times story from 1986 wherein Delmert Mike Vreeland was listed not as a criminal suspect but as a friendly witness in a major narcotics seizure involving I think 400 kilos of cocaine in Southern California. And one of the LAPD officers mentioned in the story was an intelligence officer that I have previously documented had connections with the CIA. And here Vreeland turns up not as a bad guy, but as a friendly witness who just happened to be living next door to a major drug trafficker. Close scrutiny of the Vreeland case record, especially from the court files, corroborates his assertions more than it raises questions about them.
It was primarily through his lawyers, we understand, that he was trying to warn us, I guess, CSIS and the RCMP and the Canadian government up here?
It had been a two-pronged effort. I have interviewed Mike on this, and I have a story on my website at copvcia.com, which is a detailed interview with him. Initially, after his December 2000 arrest, he started making a number of calls and attempts on his own to reach CSIS, the RCMP, the FBI, and various U.S. agencies. Those were all rebuffed, and then when he had two lawyers, Rocco Galati and Paul Slansky, on his side, they both, after talking to him, were convinced that he had serious information, and they both knocked on a great many doors in very high Canadian government positions and were also rebuffed.
This is Greg Duffel here. Are you waiting for any other piece of information, any other shoe to drop, so to speak?
There's a lot more shoes to drop. I mean, not all of the information that Mike Vreeland has in his possession has by any means been disclosed. There is much more to be learned. We just learned in a radio appearance last night of a 35-page letter written to the chief of U.S. Naval Operations as a warning letter pre-September the 11th, and that letter may yet surface. There are other documents and other pieces of information which Vreeland has been trying to properly bring to the attention of U.S. government sources and Canadian government sources that I think as the scandal unfolds here in the U.S. Are going to trickle out. Yeah, I think there's a lot of shoes hanging out there.
And how significant is the note that Vreeland wrote, and what's on it that is so significant?
Well, the note was not strictly about 9/11. The upper portion of the note was a last-ditch warning. Both Vreeland and his attorneys had said, look, something's going to happen in a couple of weeks or so. It's very close. Seal this in an envelope and open it later. That includes the listings on the note of the targets, the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, the White House, Sears Towers, several Canadian buildings, the Parliament building, the World Bank, and so on and so forth, and an ominous note saying, let one happen, stop the rest. You know, it is inconceivable that someone could have known of targets like the Pentagon and Sears Tower, which was later confirmed to have been a target on September the 11th, without having had some kind of detailed information. That's just not a credible wild guess that anyone would have made. Vreeland and his lawyers decided to take that tack because nobody would listen to them, and they knew that the attacks were imminent. They did not know the exact day, but they knew it was going to happen probably in the very early part of September, and they were right.
Are there any other names on that, or names or words on that note that you've done any research on or that you feel are significant that hook in with the September 11th attack?
Not directly. I mean, the bottom half of the note has to do with other intelligence operations that Vreeland was connected with, and there are some very, very significant names. Tijinsky, I think, is one. There's another one named Olis on the list that check out to be very closely connected to Russian organized crime and to major oil companies, and we know that there is a very strong oil interest in and around September the 11th. These are obscure pieces of information that take a great amount of time to research, and Mike has not yet violated all of his security oaths by discussing all of them. However, as I've dug up little bits of research on various pieces, he's been forthcoming about what I found. And there's an interesting backstory that goes into organized crime and oil in the lower half of the letter.
There's a mark listed, MARC.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Bastion?
Yes. As far as I know, yes. I don't have a letter in front of me now, so it's very difficult to do this out of, off the top of my head. So.
Did you look into the words brown recluse at all?
Yes, there's that's some connection to a spider and a specific kind of poison. And I'd rather not shoot from the hip on that. Vreeland and I have had some discussions on that, and that may have been involved in Bastien's death.
No, I was wondering if you were able to maybe interpret any other specific words on the document. There's a mention, I believe, of a chemical company in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm. I do have some background information, but I'm not prepared to comment on that at this time. I'm working on a story about that.
What do you think is going to be on the agenda for Mike Vreeland? Do you suspect a timetable? He's still, they're still trying to extradite him to the United States. I don't know what the situation is there and how imminent that might be, or he's here on refugee status, but what do you suspect his timetable is going to be?
He doesn't have a scheduled hearing, I don't think, until perhaps July or August. I'm not sure of the exact date. He's in kind of a limbo status now, and there are no major pending motions. And this is a drawn-out process, I'm certain that Mike would like to delay it as long as possible. He would certainly ultimately like to defeat the extradition issue, but I think with the recent revelations in the U.S. about the Bush administration's foreknowledge, and we have just seen the tip of the breaking iceberg on that scandal, I think Mike Vreeland's position in Canada will become more important on the world scene. There's going to be a lot of more people looking at him.
There was a lot of talk during the trial that at one point anyway, that Vreeland changed his status or fixed his status at the Pentagon through hacking of the site. And this intimates beyond that aspersion that he had access to computers while in jail. Well, do you know anything about that?
Well, you have two different points there, and you can't answer them both as one question. Yes, he had access to computers while he was in jail. In a recent radio interview that he and I were both on, he talked about having had access through a particular technology, which I guess is commercially available in Canada, where from a telephone you can use voice commands to access a computer and have emails read to you. He did not physically have a computer in his cell, nor does the fact that he had access to a computer off-site to read and retrieve emails or probably read website documents, does that establish that he could have hacked into the Pentagon computer system. But that's a really fallacious argument anyway, and there's an obvious reason for that. The charge on which he's being held is a supposed credit card fraud charge originating from the state of Michigan involving his own credit card. It's not a serious charge at all. On the other hand, if Vreeland had hacked into the Pentagon's computer system, you would think that the United States government would have filed criminal charges against him and demanded his extradition on national security grounds immediately. Yet the Pentagon has made no such charge.
Getting back to his access to computers, if he was held incommunicado, then, you know, during his imprisonment, he would have had no knowledge of Bastion's death. Now, although Bastion's death wasn't heavily reported in the newspapers, and probably it was Vreeland's announcements that it was murder that probably pushed, and the trial itself that pushed it somewhat into the mainstream, it does give the suggestion that he could have been doing a lot of research while in jail.
Well, the timeline indicates otherwise. The timeline indicates he was told that Bastion had been killed by RCMP personnel, and I believe this was before the first news stories had broke. I would check with his lawyer on that. Had broken. And it was at that time that he said immediately, well, if he's dead, he was murdered, and I'll tell you how they did it. And then it took, what, 6-8 months after that before the autopsy reports finally indicated the cause of death as having been exactly the way Vreeland says it was. Now, of course, Vreeland could not have committed the murder. The time of death was fixed at days after his arrest in Canada. So he didn't commit the murder, yet he knew how it was done, and he had told Canadian authorities what type of poison had been used months before the autopsy report finally disclosed it.
So when is your understanding that he told or that he learned of Bastion's death?
Well, again, I don't have my documents in front of me, and it's difficult for me to peg an exact date. Whenever Bastion died, and I'm assuming it was in early December of 2000,
December 12th, I think.
Yeah, and he was told shortly thereafter by the RCMP that Bastion was dead, and he said, if he's dead, he was murdered.
I don't know. I might have misunderstood something that I heard in one of the other interviews, but I'm just thinking it's a small detail, and it's perhaps totally unimportant, that he actually had this discussion with the RCMP and CSIS people in August. So that would have been a whole 8 months afterwards.
That's not my recollection, but again, I don't have the files in front of me.
Okay.
My recollection, based on conversations with him and radio shows I've done with him and conversations with his attorneys, is that the moment that he learned that Bastion was dead, he said it was a murder.
Getting back to Vreeland's criminal record,
mm-hmm.
Is it possible that there are people in that are still out there that have been defrauded, who think that Vreeland has defrauded them, but really that this defrauding was done at the behest of the United States government, and they're still out money?
Well, I have no idea. That's total speculation on my part. I have heard Mike say on a couple of occasions, somebody please show me a victim somewhere. And to my knowledge, this is what his lawyers are trying to do, which is to get people to come forward and say, yeah, this is, Mike Vreeland ripped me off. And to my knowledge, there has been no such victim identified. I could be wrong. But, you know, listen, I worked intelligence at LAPD. I worked narcotics at LAPD. It is common to salt criminal records to establish credibility for undercover operatives.
But given your knowledge, given your experience, I can understand how criminal records can be created and how drug kingpins or people or just regular drug dealers can be put away and Vreeland might be associated or those like it. But to your knowledge, do you know of any other cases where people have been ripped off and have stayed ripped off and the people who did it, who perpetrated it, were doing so for the U.S. government for other reasons? Have you ever encountered a case like that?
No. But that, you know, just because I haven't encountered it doesn't mean it hasn't happened. You know, that's just...
I understand.
I didn't work at that kind of a level. It doesn't seem necessary to me to go out and victimize someone, because when you create a victim, you create a whole new set of problems about a victim wanting restitution and victims asking questions. So, you know, there may be some victims out there. I have never said that Mike Vreeland was a saint. You know, he has done bad things. That's not, I'm not disputing that, but that's not relevant to my interest as a journalist, which is, it matters not to anyone in the U.S. or Canada whether Mike Vreeland has committed a crime. What matters to the whole world is whether he wrote an accurate warning and knew about the attacks of September the 11th before they occurred and tried to warn. That's the issue.
Now, this current revelation that the Bush administration had been warned earlier, that we're all aware of now, that broke yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that's going to affect the Vreeland case? How do you think that's going to affect media scrutiny of what you've been saying, or increased exposure? Do you expect, or have you had, a lot of inquiries?
I am buried. We haven't been able to breathe all day. This story is just beginning to break, and the positions of the Bush administration are, as expressed in the last 48 hours, are total lies. They're provable lies. Ari Fleischer said that the president had no idea that that Bin Laden might hijack aircraft to use as weapons, and I have documented 7 months ago clear and concrete warnings from foreign intelligence services stating that hijackers were going to hijack commercial aircraft and crash them into buildings. Vladimir Putin, the president, a head of state, specifically warned the U.S. government in the strongest possible terms in August of pending attacks. And there's an Izvestia story from September saying that Russian intelligence had warned of 25 suicide pilots trained to hijack aircraft and crash them into buildings. The Bush the modified limited hangout that you're hearing today is a total and easily proven lie. So this story is going to get much, much bigger, and Mike Vreeland's credibility is going to get much, much stronger. He just decimated a critic yesterday in California on the radio. His lawyers are there. What I'm saying is people need to get past the simplistic, question of, gee, he has a criminal record, so I shouldn't listen to something that I don't want to hear. They need to get to the point to look at the record to see what it was he was trying to say, the clear and incontrovertible evidence now from testimony from jailers that he wrote a letter a month before the attacks, that it was relevant to September the 11th, and he was trying everything he could do to warn of the attacks. His case is getting stronger by the minute.
Okay, I'm guessing we've probably come to the limit of our time with you, right?
Yeah, I've got two people standing here staring at me like I owe them money. So.
So I just wanted to thank you for taking the time out to speak with us.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Thanks. Cheers. Very much.